show the kids. He is a Lander County Sheriff's Deputy, and that's part of Lander County. Lander County only has two main cities. One of them is Battle Mountain, the other one is Austin, in case you've ever heard of that one. And you can imagine it stretches over quite a distance. The church in Battle Mountain was scheduled to be closed also because there's no pastor. We adopted that church. That church went out of existence, went right back into existence as basically what is known as a satellite church. So they are a part of us. And you say, well, I don't know them. Well, I don't either. But I know Stephen. And Stephen has agreed to be the satellite pastor of that church. Isn't that awesome? But thank God. Thank God. See, Stephen, having been in the Army and been in Afghanistan, knows what the term boots on the ground means. And when you think about a satellite church, especially one that's that far away, you need boots on the ground. You can imagine what it would be like for me to pastor them. They probably wouldn't trust me, right? You're not looking, I don't like it when you look at me like that. Yeah, I know. Yeah, you don't trust me, I know. But see, the idea is they don't have any reason to. Small towns in Nevada are very suspicious of newcomers. But Stephen's been there. So Stephen is the boots on the ground of that church. There's two other legs. Think of it like a three-legged stool. We're going to be streaming our services to them for the duration that they need that. It might be forever, might be a week, we don't know. But probably a little longer than a week and maybe not quite as long as forever. And what we'll do is we'll stream our worship and the message every week to that church. And then they might be a week delayed. We haven't worked all that out, but that's what we're looking at. One of the great things about it is they have enough money in the bank to pay their mortgage. Now, we don't want them to do that because they'd have no money, but they're making it. It's not like we're coming in and adopting a church and we're going to throw a bunch of money at them and make them work. That's not it. They're viable. But they don't have anyone to lead. The third leg on the three-legged stool is all that, you might call it administrative stuff, the way that you do church and stuff. And so we'll provide that and train Stephen and the others how to do that and as soon as possible get out of that. I mean, that's part of the thing we can get out of. For the foreseeable future, we have a baby. That's an awesome thing. So I talked to Stephen. He's really nervous about it. And if you talk to Stephen, please don't call him Pastor Stephen or something like that. That's Deputy Stephen. You say, well, that's a weird model. I mean, hey, if he's going to be a pastor, why doesn't he quit his job? Well, you could ask me that, but you're not going to. But he's in the community because of the job he has. And this is one of the things I've been praying about for a long time. Little tiny churches in far out places, whether it's in the center part of California, which I happen to have a little knowledge of, or throughout the rural parts of Nevada, you don't approach it like a church in a city. Imagine what happens if we take someone out of our Bible school, Life Bible College, and we place them in Battle Mountain. Take a wild stab in the dark guess about how long they'll last. Not very long. Why? Because nobody knows each other. And they've got great ideas and they've got fervor, but they don't have wisdom and they don't know how to work in that sort of situation. And they don't have relationship. And that's the key in small towns. It's relationship. So I'm pleased to tell you that Stephen has good relationship. He's either arrested him or they've got off. They feel like they've got one over on him. And so he's very well liked in the area, and they know him. One of our wildlife biologists, they coach a team together. And I'm going, wow, what better way to get to know a guy who is raised up in a whole different philosophy? That's an awesome thing. So I want you to be praying for Battle Mountain. Now, they're not hearing this right now. We haven't got that going. But I wanted to tell you, and I told Richard and Lucy this morning so they would know, not be surprised. Who wants to hear about your son doing something like that in open field? It's just not done, not the right way. So I already told them, I had a talk with the council last week about kind of this is where we're going. So for you council members, this is your notification. It's actually happening. We're doing it. And the thing is that over time, we may very well, I think you can expect to have events taking place in Battle Mountain. We would call them missions trips, but maybe that has a connotation of something that for you might be a little negative. So I want you to know that we're going to be doing things in Battle Mountain. But some of those things may surprise you. They have a building. It's a nice little building. They're making the payments on the mortgage. Who knew? But there are believers in Jesus Christ that go to that church. Now let me tell you just a little backstory, anonymously, of why I feel this is so important. I know a fellow. He is known as an atheist. You may have heard me speak of him. I'm not going to mention his name today. He grew up in Battle Mountain. He got married in a church in Battle Mountain. And his wife did not honor their marriage covenant. Is that a clean enough way to put it? Everybody knows? And the church took her side. And he became an atheist. And I can tell you that this same scenario plays out over and over and over again throughout rural Nevada. I don't know why. I try to figure why. If something like that happened here, we'd be going, you know, let's talk about this. We've had it happen in this church. It's been years, but I think we took an appropriate stand on that. We don't just let it go. In fact, it's one of the things that is such a concern that as Christians, that we really walk the walk that we talk about. It's really important to do the right thing. And so I look at that and go, that sort of town needs something special. So I don't know what the future holds for that little church, but I will tell you this, that it actually is like a lighthouse in a dark place. It's going to be done fairly and in order. If you know Stephen, now Stephen's kind of a funny kid, but he's as straight arrow as the day is long. I've known Stephen, we were talking about it yesterday, almost 25 years. And during that time, I got a chance to train him on sound. And I gave him a speech. You might say, well, I've never heard you give that speech before. You should have been in my other church. I gave an even different speech. But I went to Stephen, and he really wanted to learn sound. And you know the saying, my dad loved the saying, you know, he always wanted to learn sound in the worst way. He had no real idea what he was doing. And I said, okay, sit down. And he could be really goofy. Until Stephen grew into his hands and feet, he was like a big puppy dog. So you get what I'm saying here. He's an extremely good and reliable and upstanding man of God now. But back then, he was a goofy kid. We weren't sure exactly. He was either going to be very successful or be a real mess. And he wanted to do sound. I said, look, buddy. Sound, a church ministry is 95% sound. And if you mess this up, you're done. And I don't know if he thought I was going to kill him, which is a possibility, or if it would just be that we, you know, he'd be removed summarily, you know, with extreme prejudice from that position. But he rose to the occasion and actually became a very, very good sound guy. And this church used to do a Christmas outreach. It was a big deal. And it went over to the community center over on Richards Way. And there would be hundreds of people. I don't know, a lot of people. It wasn't just church folks. And the idea was invite your friends and neighbors, especially people that didn't know Jesus. And it was a safe place, and yet they would be able to see the gospel. And we would take all sorts of sound stuff out of our church and move it over there. And, of course, this isn't the sort of thing that gets over with the minute it closes out. So around 10, 10:30, we'd finally get all the stuff back to the church. And Stephen Priest and Stephen Wiley would help me put everything back together for Sunday morning. We always did it on a Saturday night. Don't ask me why the wisdom of that was. And they would help me put everything back together so it would work. And Stephen Priest counts that. Now, I haven't asked Stephen Wiley. He probably does too. But Stephen Priest counts that as some of the greatest times in his life. Now, why would that be? It might be because he got to serve. And it might be because he was trusted. And he was responsible. And so then we look at his life, and the guy became more and more responsible. Oh, he's still a funny kid. He always will be. But he's a very responsible young man. He served us in Afghanistan as a military policeman. Tough deal. And then he came back, and he's working for the Lander County Sheriff's Office as a deputy. I've been pulled over by him once. He knew who I was. So that was pretty safe. I've had breakfast with him, and it's amazing. Those of you that know Cliff, if we ever go to lunch, if you've ever gone to lunch with Cliff, guarantee you, someone will say, "Hey, Cliff," and he knows somebody. Never happens to me. They always know Cliff. And the weirdest thing was, we were down in southern Nevada. Cliff sees two people he knows. I knew one of them, sorta. He knew the other two really well. How does he do it? I don't know. But I'm having breakfast with Stephen, and people are walking, "Oh, hi, Stephen." And the waitress knows, "Hey, Stephen, where do you want to sit? And you want the usual?" I'm going, whoa. And that time, they didn't know Cliff. That was nice. But they did know Stephen. And so for us, when people know you, what do they know you as? Or do they know you at all? You see, there's something about that connection, and it doesn't just matter in little, small towns. So today I want to talk to you about a hard thing. It's a hard thing this morning to talk about, hard thing to hear about. It's a thing that's common, and it's a thing that's really easy to just kind of ignore, excuse away. We do it all the time. I want to talk to you about difficult people. Now, I'm not talking about Stephen, I'm not talking about Cliff, just in case you're wondering. You're probably saying, "Well, you're about as difficult a person as I know," and that's okay, I'll take that heat. But we get difficult people in our lives, and it's like, ugh. In fact, every once in a while at work, I'll get this mailer that comes out, and I forget the company, but how to deal with difficult people. I always throw it away. It's like, oh, you can't tell me anything I don't know. You don't even know the difficult people I get to work with. And of course, you know, they're thinking about just at work. I could take a course, it wouldn't help. You say, well, it might help with us, but then again, you're not difficult. Or maybe some of you are. But I'll let you look in the mirror to tell that. I love you all. 2 Timothy 4 is where I want to start out today. Just I have a few verses. I'm not going to be especially long in the message today. I took a long time kind of explaining this adoption. You better be praying for Battle Mountain because they need our prayers. What an awesome thing. We get to pray for another church. 2 Timothy 4:14. Alexander the coppersmith, this guy's he's a bad dude, did me much harm, Paul's talking. May the Lord repay him according to his works. He did some bad stuff. But he gives a warning in verse 15 that we need to pay attention to. And we get this in ourselves all the time. You also must beware of him, for he has greatly resisted our words. Note that. Note that very carefully. Now, in my disagreements and my dealings with people, it's vital for me to realize that many of them resist the word, but they're not necessarily resisting me as a person. It's not personal. That's one of the first things we have to learn. Difficult people oftentimes are difficult for reasons that do not involve you. They're just difficult. I'm bought with a price, the Bible says. I'm not my own. And that's true of you too. Anybody in Christ has been bought with a price. You're not your own anymore. And that means that we don't have the right to just tell people off, treat them rudely, or even love them in a way that results in us feeling better about ourselves, but they feel like they are really not worthy. When Jesus loved us, how did he do it? He died for us. Horrible death, very public, and it's like the worst thing you can imagine to go through this, especially when you don't deserve it. And then we get off thinking that even though we're not perfect, hey, you shouldn't treat me that way. Really? Would you mind showing me where that's written? I wish I could find it. But I find that oftentimes people treat me rudely. They treat me badly. They're resisting the word, but it's not personal. But boy, sometimes we take everything personal. We make it about us. And that's not what Jesus has called us to.